Hello and welcome to Practically Speaking, an informal discussion with the management team of North Point Ministries. Our hope is that we can offer practical suggestions to the challenges of leading a local church. My name is Lane Jones, and this segment continues a series on the seven practices of effective ministry that formed the basic operating system for how we do ministry here at North Point. Today we're going to discuss practice number two, think steps, not programs. As always, I'm joined by Andy Stanley. Andy, in the first practice, Clarify the Win, we explored the idea of giving people in our ministry a clear picture of success at every level of the organization. That is, we're going to clarify what a win looks like for them. But clarifying a win and getting there are really two different things.
Absolutely. Clarifying the win is about identifying the bullseye on the target. It's about identifying the mission, the purpose, whatever. And when you identify the mission, or when you clarify the win in an organization, it releases so much energy and so much enthusiasm that unfortunately people charge off in a dozen different directions with all kind of good, well-intentioned ideas, you know, to get the ball down the field and to win, as you defined it. But anybody who's been in church work for very long knows that you can be very busy without being productive. You can be very active without being strategic, and you can be fully programmed, but again, not win. And so what we want to talk about today is this second ministry practice that sort of takes us from clarify the win to what needs to be done in order to harness all that energy and focus all that energy and make sure that at the end of the day, the end of the budget, the end of the calendar year, we've actually won, not simply expended a lot of energy.
Yeah, because otherwise you just end up with a lot of programs and a lot of things going on.
Lots of activity.
Right. Yeah. Also joining us today is Reggie Joyner, one of our executive directors here at North Point Ministries. And Reggie, our response to this tendency to overprogram is stated in our second practice, think steps, not programs. What does it mean to think steps, not programs?
Several years ago, when we coined the phrase think steps, not programs, we were trying to figure out a strategic way to help all of those who worked with us think about what they do and what they don't do. In other words, we knew that we were going to have to create different environments, do a lot of different kinds of ministries, so we had to have some way to prioritize what we would do. And we basically said we want everyone to think steps, not programs. And by saying that, we were suggesting that before you start anything at all, you need to make sure it takes you where you want to go. In other words, we're responsible for people who show up at our churches, and we need to think in terms of where we want them to end up before we start planning our programming.
And a program isn't necessarily a path. It's just a program. So to think steps, not program, is to ask the question, how do we connect and transition our programs in such a way, just like you said, so that they actually take people where we've determined they need to go?
Along with that idea is you have to push really hard at drawing a line of distinction between these two words, programs and steps. So along the way, everyone at every level of your organization can quickly identify something that is just a program and something that is a step helping to lead people down a certain path and into a certain direction.
Okay, well then unpack that for us. Then what is the difference between a step and a program?
Well, if you were to actually look up the word program in the dictionary, it would say that a program is a system of services or opportunities designed to meet a social need. Now, most of us as ministers, we understand that because that's what we do all the time. We have grown up in systems of ministry that were built around the idea of a need. And then if you were to look up the word step in the dictionary, you would see it defined as this. It's one of a series of actions or measures taken to achieve a goal. In other words, the idea of a step carries with it the idea of a strategy. When you think programs, you always tend to ask the question, what is the need? And that question is followed by a second question, then how can I meet that need? And thus you're down the road of doing ministry to meet needs. But when you think steps, you ask a different kind of question. You start asking a question, where do we want people to ultimately be? And that question is followed by another question, well then, how are we going to get them there?
And as you create steps in your ministry, basically you not only answer the question, how are we going to get them there, but we're able then to give people a plan and a strategy, and it's not cluttered with all the, you know, the programs that churches tend to get cluttered with.
Absolutely. The result of thinking steps, not programs, is a ministry or an environment that works strategically, that is created strategically to lead someone somewhere.
So, Reggie, what's wrong with doing a program that's going to meet a need?
Well again, remember, most of us have been in that world, and most of us somewhere along the way woke up and we looked around at what we did and we saw the people that were coming in and out of our programs, and we wondered, are we really making a difference in their lives because they don't seem to be going anywhere? And when you start thinking in terms of steps, you begin to look at people spiritually at where they are and thinking about where they need to be. I remember when we started the church and we were working on our mission statement, and we came up with this mission statement of leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ, what that meant to us was, wherever someone is, we want to help them take the next step in moving toward that relationship to Christ.
And when we did that, we had to ask the question, then how do you move or how do you progress people in their relationship with Christ? And simply meeting their felt needs doesn't do it. It just doesn't. And anybody who's been in church work for a long time knows that. Creating an environment where kids come or adults come and get a need met, you know, we feel good and the numbers grow and we're under budget and we feel successful. But in terms of moving them in a measurable way toward a growing relationship with Christ, which ultimately is everybody's need, whether it's the felt need or not, that's the goal. That's the Great Commission. And programming should simply be a means by which we do that. And when you begin to think steps, not programs, it helps you streamline your programming and it makes sure that your programming takes you where you want your people to go.
And something happens to you when you stand up in any of these environments and you're addressing an audience, you're communicating, or you're thinking in terms of how you're going to program, because you're constantly thinking about, okay, where are the new Christians in this? How can I make sure they understand this and they take the next step? And where are the seasoned believers? And maybe I need to push them to volunteer and get involved in ministry. But we're always consciously thinking about how to leverage everything we say and everything we do to help people keep moving.
In fact, one of the unique things about our ministry model, as we've looked at other models, there are no environments that anybody stays forever. Think about that. There are no environments at North Point where anybody gets there and that's their permanent forever environment. Whether it's children moving sequentially through age-graded programs, to people moving into groups that are not their groups forever, whether it's moving to strategic service and beginning at one level and moving to another, it's a constant flow. And so when programming is done in terms of steps, not simply dead-end programs, people are moving and that movement facilitates spiritual growth. So what we're really talking about is we're moving from a mindset that says, let's just create a lot of rooms and a lot of pockets for people to have activities in, to something that's sequential, that makes sense, again, that takes people where we want them to go, which is toward maturity in Christ.
And closely related to that issue of understanding where people are spiritually and helping them move spiritually in a direction is the idea of where people are relationally. If what is true about their spiritual growth, then that principle also applies to their relational growth. And one of the things that we discovered at the beginning of this entire endeavor was we cannot force people to grow relationally. We can't force them to become friends with people and to network and to connect. The only thing, again, we can do is to create environments that will facilitate that process, that will help them move from stage to stage, not only spiritually in their spiritual growth, but relationally, because we believe that is an important ingredient as well in their journey of faith.
So then your strategy really becomes a series of steps of moving people toward that destination you're talking about. And Andy, I know that early on when we began to talk about our strategy, it really was sort of birthed out of an experience that you and Sandra had at another church you visited.
Yeah, I mean, my dad's a pastor, so I grew up in church world like many of those in our audience. You know, my whole church experience in terms of programming was basically a lot of dead-end programs. Interesting, fun, but I couldn't necessarily explain how one led to the other. Bringing all that with me into this opportunity we had to start a new church, one Sunday morning, Sandra and I were visiting a church in another city, and after we experienced the whole morning, we went to the morning worship service, we were leaving, and Sandra made this comment. She said, you know what? That was a lot like visiting someone's home, and once they let you in the door, they ignored you the entire time you were with them. I thought, that's exactly right. We got in the door. We had to find our way around. We experienced, you know, the whole morning deal, made our way out to the car, but it was as if we were ignored. And from that idea, again, bringing with us all the baggage of, you know, church world, we decided that things need to make sense. They need to be sequential, and we need to create environments that pick people up in the parking lot and take them somewhere throughout their journey with us, throughout their time with us as a local church.
And that experience really led to our current strategy,
which basically we now call our foyer to kitchen strategy. And whenever you're talking about environments at North Point, you can pretty much, for the most part, label any one of our environments as a foyer environment, a living room environment, or a kitchen environment. And again, you've got to envision moving,
right,
moving relationally, moving physically through a home from the foyer to the living room to the kitchen. And in each one of those spheres, in each one of those environments, there's a different purpose and a different goal and a different thing that can be accomplished.
And when we think about programming under that canopy, basically we're saying, what do we need to help facilitate people's movement from the foyer to the living room to the kitchen? And we can talk about those specifically in a minute. And anything that facilitates movement is a yes. Anything that impedes movement is a no. And anything that's interesting but doesn't, you know, help people progress or keep them from progressing, we're just not interested in doing. Not, again, that any of those programs aren't effective in their own right, but if it doesn't facilitate movement through the process, we just don't do it.
And chances are, if you were to look around in your church, as we have in our church oftentimes, you can find some places where people are stuck and they're not moving.
And then understanding the distinctive role of each of those environments as a step, it really helped us prioritize around the needs we were trying to meet and the specific people we were trying to connect with in those environments.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the things that I think has helped us with our volunteers as well as with our leaders is the simplicity of this model, because we can explain it in about 2 or 3 minutes with a napkin at a table so anybody can understand it. We draw 3 circles on a piece of paper, a large circle, a medium-sized circle, and a small circle that illustrates these 3 different rooms and the movement that people will ultimately make within our organization.
Yeah, not only physically but relationally, because in the foyer we talk about people feeling and being treated like special guests. In the living room environments we talk about people being in a place where they can begin to connect with like-minded people or people in their stage of life. And then in the kitchen environments, we talk about people connecting in such a way as they feel like they're part of a family, a church family. And so again, programming becomes a process of facilitating people's movement from foyer to living room to kitchen.
That model has been so effective for our staff, because when you start thinking about those different circles, when you start thinking about what has to happen in the foyer, it's huge, because if people walk away and they don't feel like guests, they don't feel like, you know, they have been treated, you know, a certain way, and we make the mistake of not leveraging that, and like Andy said a while ago, we don't make the mistake of ignoring them while they're here, then they'll come back. And that's an important thing. One of the goals of the foyer is to actually have them maybe change their mind about the church and what we do and why we do, because we're trying to get in that door with them.
And then we have to ask the question, what's next? How do we make it obvious to them what's next? And then how do we move them to whatever it is next? And, you know, one of the things I think church planters and people who are transitioning their churches struggle with is we get so focused on making the worship service or the worship experience, or in our case, foyer environments, relevant and exciting. And at the end of the day, at the end of the weekend, we say, wow, it was great. Look how many people were here. The music was great. The sermon was relevant. But the question you ask is, what's next? And do people know what's next? And how are we moving them to what's next? Otherwise, the worship service just becomes another program rather than a step.
And that's an easy place to get stuck. If all of a sudden they look around at a room of 700 people or 1,000 people or 2,000 people and there's no relational connection because they haven't moved to the living room, they can't go where they need to go relationally.
And it goes back to the definition, Reggie, that you gave earlier. Before you start anything, make sure it takes you where you need to go. Andy's done a great job at saying success for us is never going to be filling up the foyer. Success for us is always going to be determined of how many people have we moved through that process of getting them around those kitchen tables and getting them in those relationships of family.
And so then the kitchen table becomes the very visible end. It becomes the very place we want people to be. And all of a sudden you have this mark that you're moving people toward that becomes very critical as you begin to think in terms of steps.
At every level of the organization, children, middle school, high school, singles, married, adults, all the way through.
I can't tell you how huge that has been for every department director in family ministry to know, you know what, if we do all of these other things but people aren't moving to the kitchen, then something needs to change. Something needs to be massaged. Something needs to be tweaked. Something needs to be reevaluated.
We need to add steps.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay, then practically speaking, how do you create a step?
Well, first you have to define where you want people to be. And I don't know about your church, if you're listening, I don't know what you've defined that as, but you need to spend a lot of time with your staff, and you need to ask some hard questions so that you can come to a conclusion about where you want people to end up in your organization.
And let me say something about that, Reggie. As a senior pastor, see, my tendency is to want people to be in the worship service, because I have a tendency to measure my success by how many people lined up in rows to listen to me speak. And if the senior pastor, that being me, gets locked into that mindset, then if I'm not careful, I'll just try to create steps into worship. or in your case as family ministry, you know, one of the big four-year events you do is kid stuff. If you're not careful, you'll design the entire children's ministry around more people sitting in kid stuff, all of which are wonderful experiences. And so what you're saying is so true. If there's not the discussion of, okay, let's take off all of our hats, let's forget all of our ego, what is the best environment for people to be in? And then begin creating steps in that direction. And that is a very difficult discussion to have. And, you know, the senior pastor's got to lead that discussion, and you got to check your ego at the door.
And there is just something in us that thinks bigger is better. And what we're literally saying that we've decided in our organization is smaller is better.
Smaller is better because we believe life change happens in relationships and in community.
Okay, having decided that, having identified that ultimate destination, what makes a good step?
Well, I can tell you along the way, we can honestly give you some examples of bad steps because we've learned both the good and the bad. And this whole idea of thinking steps, not programs, is a challenge to any organization because you have to relearn and unlearn some things that are very important. And I think one of the breakthroughs for our staff actually happened on a Monday staff meeting when Andy came in with different colored construction paper.
Yeah.
And he took one color of construction paper and he put it at the end of the room and he said, okay, if this represents the kitchen, if this represents our goal, if this represents where we want people to be, then – and Andy, you want to finish the illustration?
Yeah, what I did, I put a piece of red construction paper about 30 feet away from a yellow piece, and I had one of our staff ladies stand on the red piece, and I said, okay, I want you to step to the yellow piece without stepping on the floor. Well, she stood there and everybody laughed. And then I took some other colored construction paper and scattered it around on the floor. And she was able to step from one to the other to the other, but she still wasn't able to get, you know, make the step to where she needed to be. So I began to ask the question, what's the problem? And some people said, well, it's too big of a step. I said, exactly. That's one of our issues. One of the other issues was she wasn't really sure where she was going. She was just stepping from construction paper to construction paper. And I said, now imagine if we blindfolded her. And we had these pieces of construction paper lined up perfectly. Would she be able to make it? Well, no. Why? Well, she wasn't able to see. And so from this little illustration, we came up with a test. And the test basically is this. We need to create steps. And each step needs to be easy. That is, people need to be able to make it. It needs to be obvious. We need to communicate what's next. And it needs to be strategic, that every step needs to be moving people toward where we've determined they need to be. And once we sort of locked in on that idea, it made it easy for us to determine what's just programming versus a step. And it helped us identify where the gaps were, where it was too big of a step for people to make.
I remember our staff went back into a room and we wrote on a board, is it easy? Is it obvious? Is it strategic? And I think for us, there was an evaluation that happened over the next few weeks where we began to recognize there were gaps in some places. And in other places, we had spent enormous amounts of money and energy and resources to create a step, but no one knew about it. And we weren't communicating it very well. And so it allowed us to have a filter or a grid again to go through and really push hard at what we were doing.
A breakthrough moment for us came in a similar discussion where we were trying to answer the question, how can we move people more effectively from the foyer to the kitchen environment? And we had some steps in between, but there were some of our steps, they just weren't easy. They were obvious. We would announce them. They were strategic. Once you got there, you know, clearly you were moving in the right direction. But it was just too big of a step. And it was in that discussion that some of our staff came up with the idea of a group link. And group link for us has been extraordinarily successful in moving people from the foyer to the living room to the kitchen. But group link is not a program that we borrowed from another church environment. GroupLink was the answer to the question, how do we create yet another step between these two steps that are just not easy to make? And so what happens when you begin to think this way, you'll begin to create some steps that, you know, people from the outside would consider programs, but they're not just programs. They are essential steps to moving people to where you've determined you want them to be.
It seems like to me that the idea of thinking steps has really forced us in a lot of ways to create a different breed of programming that is very, very, very significant and strategic. As a matter of fact, as the younger staff come along, if they don't understand this principle and they're sitting in a room as creative as they are and as intellectual as they are, because you know a lot of them are a lot smarter than we are, they tend to go down the road of wanting to create programs. If this principle is not in place, then all of a sudden, over time and given time, the organization can become like branches on a tree going out in a lot of different directions. And I just have this visual, Andy, of all of those pieces of paper going out in different directions, because that's what happens when people just create programs.
When I share this principle with leadership, sometimes I'll take the construction paper and just scatter it out on the floor and say, it's obvious where the paper is, and it's easy to move from one piece to the other, but it's not going anywhere. It's not strategic. And I just think most churches end up there, and then you're competing for resources, you're competing for slots, you're competing for rooms, you're competing for leadership, and nobody understands how it fits together because, in fact, it doesn't fit together. It's a lot of good ideas that are all happening under one roof.
We actually call that, in our terms, sometimes sideways energy. It's very easy for us to expend our resources and time chasing things that really don't take people where we need them to go. And I think it's very important to recognize that one of the benefits of Thinking Steps, Not Programs, has been a team concept that has developed because now actually the directors feel this. They feel if they're a children's director and a middle school director, they feel like there's actually a handoff that happens and there's a transition that takes place because they see their pieces as a part of a whole and as a part of a movement taking people from a beginning to an end in that kind of linear thinking.
Yeah, a good example of that, we have a quarterly event we call Married Life Live for our married couples. And the tendency, because the event is so good, is to measure success in terms of how many people showed up, the quality of the speaker, the quality of the music. And at the end of a Married Life Live, because we bought into this concept, we found ourselves asking the question, so what? So where did that lead? So a bunch of married couples showed up on a weekend, had a great time, learned something about marriage, all of which is valuable, but where did it lead? There were 1,000 people in the room. That's not community. And so again, we were forced then to begin to work with groups to ask the question, how can we hand off? How can we leverage the last 10 or 15 minutes of a Married Life Live? How do we leverage this living room environment in such a way to get maximum bang for our buck in terms of moving people out? So it forces, in a positive way, departments to work together because success isn't simply an event. Success is moving people where we want them to go.
So then it's not only easy to see when a step is working, it's easy to see when a step isn't working, when something needs to be eliminated.
That's the advantage of thinking steps. The advantage of thinking steps is you look at everything through a different grid, and when something isn't taking anyone anywhere, or as much as you try to get it to take people in a certain direction, if it fails to do that, you just, you know, can put up your hands and surrender and say, you know what, it doesn't matter how hard we try, that will never be a step, so we're going to have to quit doing it. And at times, that can be something that's working pretty effectively by other terms and other definitions. We have killed things, actually. We're going to talk about this a little more when we talk about the next principle. But we have actually killed things that were working because they were working in terms of the average church defining success by programmatic thinking, but they were not working when you think in terms of steps.
Our area of fellowships for married adults is a good example. When we first began, we created a living room environment for married adults where they could begin to connect relationally. And the goal was then to move them from that environment to groups. And it worked great with singles. It just didn't work with married adults. And when we decided to do away with married area fellowships, there were hundreds of people involved, and we had trained dozens and dozens of leaders, and the events were successful, but they weren't taking people anywhere.
And the staff who had created area fellowships, who were basically the champions of area fellowships for married adults, were the ones who raised the flag and said, you know what? This isn't a step. Even if it costs us our job, this is not taking people, so we're not aligning with our organization philosophy. And the great thing about it is when you looked over at the singles ministry, singles were showing up for area fellowships. You know why? Because they were looking for relationships and they were trying to meet people. Most married couples weren't trying to meet people. They were just trying to get in a group. So the living room idea of an area fellowship for married adults didn't work. When we created GroupLink and we said to married adults, don't show up for a fellowship, show up to get in a group, then they showed up.
Yeah. It's clear that thinking steps instead of programs helps people get where we want them to more quickly and more efficiently, but there are other organizational benefits as well. As you've said already, it encourages the team to depend on one another. It discourages individuals from becoming territorial. You become more intentional about simplifying what you do, and it also gives people permission to not And it also gives people permission to really say no to good things.
Absolutely. The danger of any church is well-meaning, well-intentioned people who show up at your door and they have a picture of what they think church should be, and they show up and they go down this road of, I've got an idea, something we did in a past church or something that we know works because we've seen it work, and they hand it to you and with an expectation of you should start this because they want you to conform your church to the image of their picture of church.
And because it worked in their last church, therefore it'll work in this church.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that we've resisted that I think we grew up with was the idea of, you know, I've heard it taught before, if somebody comes up with a good idea, say that's a great idea, and then empower them to chase it down and launch, that we just think that's a horrible idea.
And the reason we think that is a horrible idea is because the leader who launches it usually is not the leader who maintains or sustains it.
No, and then the church staff ends up supporting something they never really made a decision to get involved in the first place.
And this is the beauty of the Think Steps Not Programs, if they don't understand this concept, they're not thinking strategically. They haven't paid their dues in your organization to understand where you want people to end up, so that's irrelevant to them. They're just trying to create something to meet a need. They have slipped back into programmatic thinking.
One thing we did early on to help us with this is we created a questionnaire to give people when they had a ministry idea. And the goal of this questionnaire was to force them to view their ministry idea through our lens. And time again, people would fill out about half the form, then come to us and say, you know what? I really feel like this is something God wants me to do, but I'm looking at the answers to these questions and it just doesn't fit, to which we say, exactly. And you know what? This may be something God wants you to do. And I know of two occasions where very, very successful ministries have been launched by people in our church. And on these two occasions, we decided to help fund those two ministries, but they are not North Point ministries. They were things that needed to be done, but they didn't fit our strategy. So we said, no, we're not going to own it, but yes, you need to do it.
And when the staff at every level feels that kind of permission, it sets them free to do the thing that they're really called to do.
Now, in taking an honest look at North Point, there are some things that need to be done that really aren't steps.
Absolutely. When you think about a foyer, living room, kitchen, and steps in between those, there are some things that don't fall neatly into those categories. And that's okay. But the beauty of thinking steps is it even forces all of those other ministries to think in terms of how what they do ultimately feeds or fuels that concept.
Or distracts from.
Absolutely.
I mean, administration. When we talked to Rick Holliday, our business administrator, and he says, you know, how is what I do a step? Well, it's not really a step, but it facilitates all the steps. Lane, the areas that you work in with our cross-cultural missions and pastoral care, you know, on the surface, it would be hard to answer the question, these are steps because they specifically move people from one environment to the other, and yet they're a necessary part of our overall strategy.
Right, and I think that thinking this way is one of the other advantages of that, is it does position our leaders to constantly think in terms of the big picture. Because even though some of my staff aren't directly involved in a specific step, they understand what they do in light of the whole strategy, and they understand that there are going to be times that, for lack of a better term, people are knocked out of alignment because of situations in life, and their role is to care for them, to love them, and really to help them back into existing in the strategy that we've created.
And wouldn't you say that even when you think about missions in our church, thinking steps has caused the mission mentality to be more strategic?
Oh, exactly. What we do is we try to leverage every environment toward understanding the ultimate goal of understanding that kitchen environment, that authentic community that is the ultimate goal that we want for everyone. We build that experience and we build that value into everything we do.
So, again, on the surface, people could come in and say, show me specifically how this or that is a step. And honestly, everybody listening to this knows there are no perfect systems, but that doesn't discount the fact that once you buy into this way of thinking, it drastically changes the way you view and even the way you do some of those ministries like administration or missions or pastoral care. You do them differently because you view them through this lens. And I love the way that you talk about this when you address our church or talk to your staff. That essentially, pastoral care, you're not simply meeting needs. You're getting people back in the game. The goal is for them to be healthy enough to be able to survive group life, to be healthy enough to be able to show up at a group link and connect with like-minded people. That it is in one sense a step, but not in the same way that some of these other programs are. So again, I think when you lay this filter over everything, it impacts not only what we do, but the way we think about everything.
Right, and it goes back to what Reggie said earlier about erasing the hard lines between departments. And we begin to recognize how by having a healthy care ministry who can come alongside people who are going through these times of struggles, it really makes for a healthy group ministry because we're able to meet a need that the group really is not created to meet. We're able to come in and partner with that ministry and in a way enable those people, like you said, to get back in the game.
I'd like to say one other thing about this while we're on this specific topic, especially the senior pastors, and just looking at this model through the financial lens. When we have people join our board of elders or our stewardship team, I constantly hear from them, this is the most cost-efficient ministry model we've ever seen or we've ever been involved in. Because literally, over the past 5 or 6 years, we have added so few line items to our budget because we're constantly tweaking, changing, focusing, and eliminating. Because the goal isn't to do more to meet more needs. The goal is to do what we've been doing all along better. The other thing that happens, it has allowed us to outsource so much ministry to men and women who are far more capable to do what oftentimes the church tries half-heartedly to do. We have and Lane, you know this, we have a list of wonderful counselors. We don't have a counseling center. We don't have a print shop. We don't have a cafeteria. We've outsourced just about everything we can if it isn't a specific step. And I think what it allows us to do, we do what we do better, and it engages our people with people outside of our church that do what they do better. And I think it's a win for everybody.
And within the organization or even within a department, if they have a step in place to help students get from A to B or from B to C, they don't create multiple steps to accomplish B. So all of a sudden, you again have trimmed fat. You're doing the best thing you can possibly do to help people keep moving and not multiple things that sometimes can create, again, you know, and once again can make your organization move more like a swamp instead of a flowing river going in a direction.
We always talk around here about, you know, our favorite restaurants and how our favorite restaurants tend to have fewer things on the menu than more things. And when I go to a restaurant where I'm leafing through page after page, it's just frustrating to me. But I like to show up and they hand me one simple menu, and it's easy to choose. It's easy to know how to get what you want.
Well, it's like they know what's good and they want you to have it. Because I think it's the logical answer to the question people always ask about how is that you guys do things so well or with such a high level of excellence. It's because we don't do that many things and we're able to bore in, really focus in on making the few things as best they can be.
One word of caution I would offer again to senior leaders and senior pastors in churches. When you listen to this, the tendency is going to be to want to go eliminate a bunch of stuff and stop doing a lot of things, which is good. What I would encourage you to do, even if you use different terminology, you don't have to copy ours, somehow develop a phrase that communicates this idea of think steps, not programs, and you begin teaching it and teaching it and teaching it. You say it over and over and over, and the tuned-in people in your congregation, they will begin to ask, well, if we're thinking steps, not programs, why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Your sharp leadership will help you begin to eliminate because you've given them a different lens by which to evaluate what they do. So don't start with the application. Start with the principle and help your people identify on their own what needs to be focused and what needs to be eliminated. Think steps, not programs.
Andy and Reggie, I want to thank you guys for joining me today, and I want to thank those of you listening as well. If you'd like more information on the 7 practices of effective ministry, they're all detailed in a book from Multnomah Press available at this website. For other resources from North Point Ministries, please go to northpoint.org.